that's one of the great things about your podcast is that it's just like that. It's like a conversation.
Well, that's specific. You won't find me pumping you for your favorite book, your most inspirational quote, and I'm not going to dredge you out for your park bench hard luck story and how you came good. I think that's very cheesy and contrived, yeah. and it's not appealing to me as a listener. I would hate to put a podcast audience through that.
This is Superfast Business with James Schranko. Helping you build your business super fast.
James Schranko here. Welcome back to superfastbusiness.com. Today we're delving into the world of video, and I've brought back a special repeat guest, Ryan Spanger. Welcome back to the call.
Thanks, James. Good to be here.
You're my regular video expert these days. How does that feel?
It feels pretty good. This is the third podcast that we've done together, or that I've been on, you know, your show, and it feels awesome.
So in previous podcasts, we have established that video is a really powerful medium, that it's something that I use in my business. Today, we're going to throw the spotlight on a little bit deeper level about exactly how I use video in a recent campaign, or actually a current campaign, it's that recent, and how I asked you to integrate with that and what sort of things came up as a result of that. So today we're going to be really getting a bit deep on the video stuff. First of all, let's just do a little basic catch up. Why is video so important for businesses, especially online businesses?
Well, video is proof, and that's what people are looking for. Before they buy your products or services, they want to reassure themselves that they're making the right decision. There's naturally, you know, a lot of fear for a lot of people when they're buying something. Are they making the right decision? Is there someone better they should be choosing? What if something's going to go wrong? And so they're really looking for evidence and proof to justify their decision. Video is a great way of justifying that, because you can show people rather than telling them. You can have interviews with happy customers who've had a successful experience that can demonstrate that it's been a successful choice. And you can create a series of videos, which is a great way of staying in touch. So rather than going out to your potential customers and hassling them, you can actually provide them with something interesting and enjoyable and useful, which is video.
So in other words, we're pretty much harnessing people's desire to consume video content on a daily basis, and we're inserting ourselves into their lives with something that's interesting and valuable for them in a format that they like to enjoy.
Yeah, this seems to be increasingly the way people like to consume content on the internet. So a lot of people would rather watch a video than read a lot of text. And so video is giving them that, but it's giving them a more exciting, you know, dynamic experience. The text will often appeal to the logical side. You can put a lot of facts and figures and that sort of thing, but video can appeal more to the emotional side. You can use music and editing and effects to affect people's emotion, to get them excited, to, you know, to touch them, as well as educate them. So it's just, you know, it's an incredibly powerful medium. And if people are used to consuming video content, watching TV, going to the movies, it's something that people are so familiar with that it's just a natural way to communicate.
Yeah, it does make sense. I suppose if people are left alone quietly for a few hours, a lot of them will gravitate towards a television or a movie. Maybe some people will pick up a book, but it seems that it's a real popular thing to take a book and turn it into an amazing epic movie, because someone can just sit there and have it delivered to them without any effort involved, whereas reading requires perhaps a little bit more discipline and it's involving a few less senses. So video's a big one. It's here to stay. It gives us a lot of power. What exactly are we talking about when we talk about how I use video in my business and how you might use video in your business? Well, in this case, we're sort of going on to a bit of a case study. I've been promoting my live event. And when I say promoting, I mean, it's not like you think of a normal promotion where you've got an enormous amount of time and massive budget. You have a whole team dedicated and jamming up the airwaves with messages all left, right, and center. In my case, a promotion is simply putting up a sales page, conveying the details of the event that's coming, and then doing a bit of pre-work, especially with some videos, and then recording some podcasts and mentioning the event fairly often in the lead up to the event. And that process generates usually somewhere around 150 to 200 attendees at an event that is a circa $1,000 investment. So just to frame how I'm using the video, I'm using the video to promote that specific event, and we have a video on the sales page that is an unusual sort of video. It's not one of those slides with this sort of sales letter style, which is very, very popular. And I'm not discounting that type of video. But in this case, we're using more of a little movie trailer type video, which I think is appears to be more engaging and certainly consistent with my brand, which is not super pushy and not micro-controlling. We still put player controls on the videos, etc. The other sort of videos that we're using are case study videos. And Ryan, you mentioned proof before. There has to be no better proof than someone who is saying how good a product is, not you, but someone else. Would that be fair to say?
Yeah, definitely, because you can tell people how great your product is, but it's more powerful to hear it from other people who've used it and experienced genuine success. So we made three case study videos about people in the Superfast Business community, and the videos weren't just about them talking about how great you are or how great Superfast Business is. They mainly talked about their own journey, what their challenges were, and how Superfast Business and the community helped them get to where they wanted to go faster and in a more successful way. So, for instance, we spoke to Jake in one of the videos who was transitioning from an offline business to an online business, which is a really common theme for people in the community and people interested in the community. So it's a great way of getting people's attention, because there'll be a lot of people who will want to watch that because they'll want to know what his journey was and how he got success. Or in Sue Ellen's video, she talked about escaping the corporate world to do her own thing. And that's, again, a really powerful theme. So we're not just making videos of people saying, oh, you know, Superfast Business is brilliant and, you know, blah, blah, blah. It's this, you know, it's connecting with their story and following their journey and learning how they got success.
And I think that's way more interesting. You know, I remember I got a video crew to capture some people at one of my events a few years ago, and almost all the people said stuff like, James is awesome, you know, this is incredible, but it wasn't really what I was hoping to get, because, you know, fantastic, that's wonderful, but I want the story. I want someone who's like Jake or like Sue Ellen or like Kate, the three case study people. I like to think that people who are in a similar situation can relate to them and think, wow, I'm a little bit like them, and perhaps what is working for them might also work for me. That's the story that I like to come through.
Yeah, exactly, because, I mean, Vox Pops are okay, but if you look at the history of how they've been used, like on television, they're essentially the voice of the average person on the street. So if there's some incident that happened in the city and a journalist wants to get some opinions, you know, they might speak to an expert. They might speak to, say, you know, the authorities, the police or whatever, and then they'll get a Vox Pop of a passerby, an eyewitness. They're not necessarily by definition experts or have that authority status. So that kind of content is okay, but content from people who are well respected in the and well known in the community, and where you're actually really sharing their story and giving a lot more context, I think carries a lot more weight.
Yeah, and I think I've got dozens and dozens of those videos, but I think we avoided using them in this particular case study, and it hasn't really been a negative impact at all.
Yeah, and sometimes when you interview people at an event, they're so full of information that they haven't really had time to kind of synthesize it yet. So some of the, as part of the research for planning these videos, I watched a lot of other videos for online marketing events, and often people can be in a sort of a bit of a hyped up state because they've just gathered so much information in such a short period of time that they can't really articulate their thoughts that well. And often, you know, they haven't actually gone out and implemented that knowledge, so they can't really speak with authority about how that experience has actually changed them. And that's where video becomes really powerful, when you can see evidence of change, where you see that before, during, and after journey.
Yeah, and I think sometimes they also say things that aren't that useful. So, like, anytime someone says, oh, I'm going to do this, or this will have a huge impact on me, I dismiss that as just talk. I value actual results rather than potential, because a lot of people place way too much value in potential. And as a buyer, I would dismiss potential as not a reality at this point. So it's therefore not that valid.
Yeah.
And then I remember one case, We had a speaker who spoke way too fast and pushed too much information into a presentation. And one of the Vox Pops said something like, "Oh, I've got so much information. I'm just so overwhelmed." And I think that's exactly not what I want at my events. And, you know, after that, a few years ago, I made sure I briefed all the presenters on how to deliver actionable information that could actually be used and to get results rather than bombard with too much information. So back to our story here, we've got a pretty strong case for using video based on how intimate it is, how you can convey the story. I certainly know that when I'm circulating in areas where there are prospects and customers of mine, they all recognize me. So I know this constant exposure to videos over the last few years on my website is a nice front door red carpet roll up to being able to use videos for a promotion. So when we put together the videos, there was another type of video we used, and these were funnel videos. And funny name, and I recently interviewed Ryan Levesque about funnels, so you might want to listen to that podcast if you didn't catch it. It was fantastic. But the funnel videos are videos that we use at different places within our marketing sequence that are typically hosted on a page that's not freely publicly available. And what happens is the autoresponder, our email system, will email a customer to that page with a specific message depending on what stage they're at in the looking or buying process. And also, with the sophistication that we have now with our autoresponder system, it can now start segmenting. And I'm not using a lot of big words in one sentence here, but we can start sending a message to people who have a specific criteria versus a different criteria. Let's use an example of one of the funnel videos. This video was a video we made for people who had purchased a ticket. However, they were not currently a member of the Superfast Business coaching community. And we sent a specific message to those people. We can tell because my system knows who is a member and who is not a member. And based on that information, it then sends a message to those people. And we make an offer for people to join the membership. And we put some compelling reasons why they should. And the results from that particular video have been nothing short of astounding. And in fact, I would say that they would cover the costs of putting together this whole video campaign just from that one little 1 minute and 32 second video. So if the question mark is, "Oh, I can't afford to do video or I'm not ready for it," I can assure you that if you have a reasonable product that you're selling, you should be able to get a return on investment from your video marketing. So three types of videos: the sales video, the case study videos, and the funnel videos.
And James, just on the topic of those funnel videos, talking about people who are concerned about whether they can afford it, you can get incredible value from these videos. I mean, we literally spent a few hours in Manly one afternoon wandering around with a camera and a microphone and filming these videos. And we had a plan of the videos to cover and a basic outline of the content. But what made the videos, you know, even more powerful was that they weren't scripted word for word. So you were speaking to the camera in a conversational way. I think we ended up with something like 22 videos, which are then serialized, which people are, you know, receiving on an ongoing basis. That's, you know, that's pretty good for an investment in a few hours of editing, a few hours of shooting, and you know, a day or two of editing.
Yeah, and I think some of that will come down to your talent, right?
I'd like to think that played some part in that. But, you know, really just the idea that it's not a massive investment of time to create a series of short videos like this.
Yeah, well, I think two things on that. One is, at Superfast Business Live, let's put up a list of the videos we actually made, because they'll give some fantastic ideas of what you can make. And so we've given an example of a sales page video. That's an obvious one. Case study videos are great for marketing away from the sales page to bring people back to it, but also on the sales page to bolster proof. The funnel video that we just mentioned was basically an upsell or a cross-sell video. You can call it whatever you like, but it's identifying who's just purchased and what they haven't purchased yet that they should purchase to improve their solution, to make sure they get even more value. And that video converted very, very well. But there was plenty of other videos, everything from the price is about to change video, through to things that you can do when you're in town video. So there was about 22 videos, as Ryan mentioned. We'll list what the videos were at the event, and many of them were just, you know, 1 minute or less, or just a little bit more. And they were, as Ryan mentioned, they were filmed pretty much in just a few hours with mobile equipment. And I think there was three of us. It was Ryan, the director and prime camera operator. There was me, the talent, and the on camera speaker. And then there was a third person just helping out with the equipment and holding the lighting thing. So it's a three-person job in this case, and it was just a few hours. So let's talk about the how-to a little bit more. The first decision I had, Ryan, was should I do this myself or should I get some help this time? Because traditionally I set up the camera and I make my own videos, and would be interesting to compare the results from my own videos back, and sometimes they were significantly longer. I think in every single case, the ones I did were nowhere near as professional as the one you produced. And this time I felt like I had to do a lot less to promote and to get my event going, because really I just had to block an afternoon for recording. And then I had to brief my team on setting up the cart the way that Jake specified. So it was much easier getting outside help. It was certainly a financial requirement to get outside help. But I can also say that having done this, it freed up my time to work on higher value activities where I am a specialist. And, you know, I'm not a specialist video operator. And if you look around the internet, the people with very, very good internet presences are using a production team. You know, they're going and booking a studio and getting proper equipment. And I think we've covered before that there is a difference in the level of amateur versus professional, and I think that's becoming more defined these days. Would you say that's something you're seeing, Ryan?
Definitely, because, you know, as people become more visually literate, as, you know, kids have gone through school and they're learning all the video production skills and that sort of thing, we've kind of been in a time, you know, leading up to now, where people have been more forgiving about poor quality video because it's been a bit of a novelty or something different. But increasingly, people are more sophisticated now. They don't want to watch poor quality video because, or it can just reflect badly on your brand, where, you know, you might have great graphic design and your website looks fantastic. You have, you know, great brochures and the design for the event is fantastic. And a poor quality video can just reduce the overall impression. But there's also opportunities that you're missing out on. I guess it's the same as a lot of the things that you do in business. You know, like a lot of business operators will write their own sales copy, and there's definite advantages to that because no one knows your customers as well as you do. But by the same token, if you connect with a great copywriter, you're more likely to get a more successful result. And as you're saying, you can then just focus more on kind of your core thing.
Yeah, and so in this case, the copywriting was really baked into the video campaign. The sales page is really just a frequently asked questions page. I haven't actually sat down and copywritten anything yet. We've more or less transcribed a video that I made for the sales page. So there wasn't really a copywriter involved outside of the storytelling in the video. I did get some proper logo from Greg Merrilies, who's a designer, and I've interviewed him on this show before. And I've got the help of a professional videographer. Now, Ryan, for a living, you run dreamengine.com.au, and you're making professional videos for all sorts of companies. Are you seeing much change in that industry?
The biggest change over the last few years has been from, in the past, people creating one-off videos, like an all-purpose, almost like brochure-style video, where, you know, they would get their business card and they would get their brochure and they would get their video, one video to tell the story of everything. And what businesses have realized now, luckily, is that it's far more powerful to create a series of videos. So it might be a number of different case studies or, you know, autoresponder style videos where they're basically using the same budget, but they're spreading it across a number of videos. And they're just so much more effective because you're having a conversation rather than, you know, just a one-off brochure style video.
Exactly. So, you know, on a recent podcast I had with Nathan Musson, we're talking about large companies cottoning onto the ideas that we're talking about in our community. It'd be fair to say that it was probably more technology and advanced marketing happening on my humble little live sales page than most large corporates are still using in their, you know, marketing campaigns.
Yeah, we, you know, as small businesses have the jump on, you know, big businesses now because often they are very risk averse. They don't really want to try something new. You know, they want to sort of stick to the old tried and trusted. And we actually have an opportunity to create far more powerful and effective videos because we can do things like case study videos which tell a real story which actually affect people emotionally. We can also experiment a little bit more and track the data and see what's working and what's not. Whereas often the larger companies, they just don't have that ability. You know, they need every video to be successful. And I think, you know, when we go into the analytics of the videos that we made, you know, we'll be able to show that some videos were extremely successful, some didn't get as many views. But that's, you know, it's far more powerful to create a whole series of videos and have some, you know, real standout ones and learn from that.
Well, you know, one of those videos, a 1 minute 32 video, had 30% conversion rate and a $10,000 in sales. So that's a pretty cool stat from such a small idea, but such an essential thing. Based on that stat, we'd have to say next year, we would do the same video again.
Yeah, absolutely.
It was worthwhile. So let's talk about that, you know, the process of what's involved. So I've made this decision. I'm involving Ryan. You go and I think you mentioned you did some research. You have a look at what's going on in the marketplace.
Yeah, that's right. I looked at a bunch of other videos and you sent me a few of some, you know, online marketing events. And, you know, really the first thing that struck me about a lot of the examples that I was seeing was that they were very hypey. There were a lot of these overexcited vox pops of people who seemed like they'd, you know, nearly, you know, been brainwashed or joined a cult or, you know, lots of grand promises and, yeah, boasting, you know, this event will change your life, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, really, that was the first thing that I could look at and say, great, now we can create something in opposition to that because that's not what Superfast Business, that's not the style of Superfast Business.
And I think we back and forth some emails, you know, saying, what do you think about it and what do you think about it? And we were refining our philosophy about how we feel about the messaging that we're seeing. And I think we agreed that we should be focusing on a different style of delivery.
Yeah, and thinking about the audience, what are the types of videos that they're going to enjoy watching and what's going to stand out? You know, is it just going to be another hypey, salesy video, which often just don't work as well as they used to? What's going to treat the community, you know, with respect, and what's going to make people say, okay, I will actually watch this because this looks to be a little bit different. So, you know, firstly, you're thinking, you know, from the audience's point of view, you're not thinking, what do I want to make that's going to, you know, can I just get on my pedestal and show off? So once we'd got more of a sense of the style of the video that we thought would work best and would, you know, resonate most with the community, it was about analyzing what are the key elements that are going to connect with people and make them take action. What's going to make them go from, you know, that sounds like a pretty cool event, to, you know, I really want to make sure that I'm there. And after spending some time talking about it, we sort of identified that the key elements were the power of being part of a community. Of course, when you're working online, you can be quite isolated, and often a lot of people, you know, your friends and family don't actually understand what you do, and they don't particularly want to talk about it either. So the draw of being part of community was very powerful. And then one of the other elements that we identified was this idea of coming to a beautiful location and actually getting a taste of the lifestyle that you lead, James.
Yeah, I think that's been a very big factor. It's the second year I'm running the event right here on my home beach at Manly. And I know that it's had a big pull on internationals. There's people coming from the freezing London, UK, you know, where it's 3 degrees and 5 degrees Celsius. They're going to land here in 28, 30 degrees in a surfing community. There's also, it's such a relaxed place that people are extending their stay before or after the event. So I think we really hit the mark with that choice. And even though it's much harder for me to run it locally in terms of dealing with the infrastructure of the hotel, the costs are through the roof, the demands that they put on contracts are ridiculous compared to the city or the CBD or the airport. But I think making some style choices that are not financially driven can also see a huge benefit. And I probably learned this more so than anywhere else when I was working with Mercedes-Benz, that people will pay a little more for a great solution instead of getting a budget solution for the lowest price.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's become like a gathering of the tribe, you know, like I'm going to stick around for a few days afterwards. And, you know, there's a few other people who'll do that as well, because it's an opportunity to not only be part of the event, but also get away from your business, reflect, and have some great conversations.
So when we were filming this, we did a lot of it outside.
Yeah.
And that was a constant, that was a definite choice relating to painting the picture of where this is. I mean, it's basically a stunning asset of the venue, and we've utilized that by getting out right in front of the place and all around here.
Yeah, so that was a key element that we wanted to go into in the video. We also wanted to focus on the fact that it's an event with a lot of integrity, so a no-pitch event that was really emphasized in the videos. And then the other element that we identified is exposing people to, you know, real leading-edge information, so information that will trickle down to your competitors in a year or two. That's what you're going to access now. So this part of the development process was vital, really spending the time to hone in on, you know, the style of the video and what the key messages are. And a lot of videos, I think, don't actually do that. And that's why they don't succeed, because they haven't done that pre-production work.
Okay. So from your point of view, what was involved? I know from my point of view, I had to do a little bit of research and liaising with you, book a time for filming a day. On your side of the fence, there was a few other things, especially I imagine when you get home, you've got all this film in the camera. What's involved from the professional videographer's perspective?
So for the case study videos, it was about selecting the right people to be involved. And, you know, there were one or two other people who I actually initially would have liked to be in the video, but they weren't that keen. And I resisted the temptation to try to convince them, because that just never really works. Ideally, you want people who are so enamored with the service or the business or the community that they would hardly even need to be asked. They're so keen to kind of shout your name from the rooftops. Those are the people that you want to have on board, not people who, you know, would say, okay, I'll do it, but what's in it for me? Or, you know, here's an iPad, or, you know, here's a free ticket or whatever. It's really about people who are just deeply passionate and would love to be involved. So identifying who they are, and then establishing rapport, telling them about what's actually involved in the process. When people are going to be in your video, I mean, they're putting themselves out there, they're making themselves a little bit vulnerable. And so they just want reassurance in terms of how long is it going to take? What sort of things are you going to ask me? Where are we going to film it? You know, what's involved? How are you going to use the video? So it's important to have those sort of conversations. At the same time, I think it's important not to actually give them the exact questions that you're going to ask them, because they're going to over-prepare then, take the spontaneity and the magic away. Sometimes people will turn up, you know, with a list of written answers, and that's just going to, you know, kill the, you know, the passion and the emotion of the video. So it's important to really give them a good feel of what's going to be involved in the video, and to develop trust and rapport, but not kind of give away so much that there's no mystery there. So that, you know, that's all the preparation stuff. And then it's important to not only write the list of questions that you're going to ask, but actually write the responses that you anticipate. Because by this stage, you should know the content and the story so well that you pretty much know what people are going to say. So you actually have already written the story in your head before you turn up. In some ways, you know how we talked about that there wasn't really a copywriter as such. In some ways, your subjects, the interviewees, they're actually the copywriters. You know, they are giving you this unique, authentic copy, but you're doing all the research and the planning and kind of guiding them. You're throwing the ball and they're smashing it out of the park, ideally. So that's part of what makes these kind of videos so powerful, is that they're real and authentic. And often, you know, you couldn't script this stuff. It's just said in a certain way that people watch.
And you also did a lot of these on location in their environment, which is very authentic.
Yeah, I think that's important, because it's more real. People are more comfortable in their own environment. So actually, you know, with each video, went to visit them and we filmed the video either, you know, where they work or at their house. Once we filmed the interviews, we filmed, you know, what's called cutaway or B-roll footage which is the sort of color that adds the story. So it's not just a talking head. It's actually, you see people talking, but then you see them working or living their life or at a cafe, and you're just giving people a whole lot more context of what this person is like. And the more context you give, the more powerful the story is.
Perfect. Okay, so once you've done the case studies and you've spent half a day filming with me, what happens next?
Well, I think it's also really worth talking just a little bit about the interview. And I think that's probably something that, you know, we can touch on, that I'll go into a lot more detail when I speak at the event, because that's something really vital that I actually see very few people doing well. And it's actually not that hard, but people often approach it in the wrong way.
You're talking about the interview with me for the sales page?
Well, probably more the interview for the case study videos.
With the case studies. Yep. Okay.
Which I'll just touch on, but it's often what people do is they feel a need to show their expertise when they're asking questions. And really, it's important to do the exact opposite. You want the person that you're interviewing to be the expert. And actually, if you come across as a little bit dumb, you're going to give people the chance to be the expert, and they're going to give you much better answers. So it's different to if you're running your own podcast. You don't want to just act dumb and ask questions. You want to show that you're an authority as well. But when you're interviewing someone for a video, it's better to show that you're not an expert. They'll explain things a lot better. So keep your questions short and ask things that actually seem, you know, quite obvious. Ask open-ended questions. So, you know, questions that aren't going to elicit like a yes, no answer, but are going to give people the chance to, you know, to really talk. And be prepared to divert from your list of questions. Often people will just have their list in front of them and go through one by one by one. And that's just a way of kind of really killing a conversation. I mean, you wouldn't sit at coffee with someone and work your way through a list of questions. It would be more of a dialogue. You need to react to what people are saying. You need to be prepared to go away from your script. And sometimes they'll give you, you know, little clues, and it's important to follow that, and you'll get, you know, much better material. I'll talk a lot more about this at the actual event, but I think if you learn how to conduct an interview properly, you're going to get much, much more powerful content for your videos.
Excellent. Yeah, it'd be good to get an idea of some of the questions that work for you most of the time. And I have seen you in action with your interviews. I think you are a very emotional person, and you're tuned into the people that you're talking to. I've had the pleasure of being interviewed by lots of different people. And you're right, sometimes they pop you on a seat, shine bright lights at you, and then rattle off the same laundry list of questions. And you've seen them do it to three people just before you, and then the next three after you. And it feels kind of like you're now crunched up into a production line, and you're now just a piece of meat, you know, being used as a marketing tool. And I very much resist those opportunities where possible, because it doesn't make you feel very special.
For sure. That's one of the great things about your podcast, is it's just like that. It's like a conversation.
Well, that's specific. You won't find me pumping you for your favorite book, your most inspirational quote, and I'm not going to dredge you out for your park bench hard luck story and how you came good. I think that's very cheesy and contrived, yeah. And it's not appealing to me as a listener. I would hate to put a podcast audience through that. We do have a framework, however, and there is some method to our madness. We always have a little discussion about what we'd like to achieve, and we are coming up to the point where we talk about action steps, see if we can strain these ideas into something useful. But just before that, I'd love to find out what's involved with the editing, because if I'm thinking through, one of the major reasons why I didn't want to do the videoing myself is that I can capture the film. You've taught me how to use the camera very well and get the good audio sound and have the right lighting and the focus. The part that I think is quite hard, aside from knowing what to say, which is a major part of what we've already discussed, is what to do with that footage afterwards to make it something amazing. And we will put the sales video from the event below this podcast, and also the case studies, so that you can see what Ryan's come up with. But what do you say to someone about the editing process? It seems like that's where the artist comes out, and where all those years of experience are required.
Yeah, I think editing is where you rewrite the story. So you already have a kind of working story or a kind of working hypothesis of how the video is going to go. And you, by the time you get to the edit, you might be sort of 50% right or 80% right or something. But the cool thing is that you'll end up with all this other great content that you had no idea people were going to say, and they'll just surprise you with great stuff. So when you get to the edit, it's time to kind of rewrite the story again based on the content that you actually have. And, you know, with the stuff that I do the pre-production and the production on, it then goes to my editors to cut. Because, I mean, even if it was something that I was going to edit, I'm actually most of the time too close to the material. So, you know, filmmaking is a group effort. It's hard to do everything yourself, because when you get too close to the material, you switch off from other possibilities. So it's a fantastic experience to then sit down with the editor and brief them. You know, this is the background. This was my vision. These are the characters. This is how I see it going. And then the editor will bring a whole lot of new things that you might not have even thought about. So you work through the content and retell the story. You look for the structure. You know, it's like chiseling out, you know, something out of clay, where all your content is there, but most of it you've actually got to get rid of. So I'd say, you know, for each video, which was 3 minutes, we might have had 2 hours of content. So most of it you don't end up using. You're just, you know, using the very best stuff. Sometimes you've got to get rid of your best stuff because it just doesn't fit with anything else. But you start to actually work out the story, and there's some, you know, if you do some research on story, then, you know, you realize that there's some common structures. And so you can kind of plug it into one of those common structures, like the hero's journey, for instance, which, you know, a lot of people are familiar with. It's like the most common story where there's someone who's living a normal life. They get this call to adventure, you know, something changes. They initially reject that call. Then something big happens that kind of galvanizes them and they have to go. So they leave their familiar surroundings and they go out into the unknown. They have adventures and trials and tribulations. They'll usually hit like a low point, but they'll work their way out of it and have like a final kind of cataclysmic event, which will change them. And then they'll go home or back to their business or whatever it might be changed, and then share that information with the world. That is like the number one most common structure for story. So you can see how the story that you're telling kind of, you know, plugs into that. Or, you know, in a more simple way, it might be the background. What was the challenge? What did you do? And then what result came? But, you know, you can look at films where you might have the very last thing that happened comes first, and then the whole film tells a lead up to that. And then when you get to the end, it's like, ah, you know, that all makes sense. So you can, once you understand structure, you can start to play with it. So a lot of it is actually playing, experimenting with the structure. And that's the great thing about, you know, video editing, is that it's so easy to just move things around and sort of go, oh, what if we try this over here, this over there, and see what the effect is. A very standard kind of rule is just lead with your best stuff, you know, like work out what is the number one bit of footage that you have. Just put that right at the start, because people have such a short attention span that you've got to do whatever you can to grab them and involve them in the story.
I like that. Lead with your best stuff. That's a tweetable right there. All right, let's see what we got here. So the in terms of actions, we probably have an event of some kind, whether it's a book launch, an info product to release. We have an agency that we want to go and win business for. Maybe we're running a workshop like I am. And so there's this reason why we need to do the video. The next step would be to think about who your customers are and start working out what the right message would be for them. What sort of story do we want to tell those customers? Is that right?
Yeah, what is the stuff that's going to resonate with them, and what's going to, you know, prompt them to take action? What are they actually looking for and demanding from you in order to take the next step? You know, how can you reassure them and give them the evidence that they need to say, okay, I can now justify my decision and take the next step?
So once we've got that, then we make the choice, do we get someone to come and help us with this? Do we do it ourselves? And either way, it's going to involve interview process, probably, if you're going to use the case study thing. There'll be the filming part, there'll be the editing part, and then you need to deploy your campaign, and that's sometimes that's just putting it on a website and driving traffic to it. Other times it might be putting it into autoresponders and having multi-sequence stories delivered. And in some cases, it will depend on where people are up to and what actions they take as to what gets deployed to their direction. So it's a choose your own adventure story. Like our 22 videos, the average customer is probably only seeing, you know, four or five of those, depending on what they've purchased before, when they decide to buy the ticket, if they decide to buy a ticket, and then in the lead up to the event. And then the last step would be to run the campaign. And then the post-campaign step would be to check the metrics and the stats, like we're doing now, to find out, of all the things you did you achieve the results you had in mind, or better or worse? Which things were the winners that you should definitely do next time, and which things were wasted resource that are not required the next time around? I think that's pretty much the helicopter overview of the process involved in what we've put together, Ryan.
That's how you do it.
That's how you do it. And I will, you know, we'll just finish on this point that currently with almost a month out from the event, there's 150 tickets sold. So I do owe you a huge thank you for what you put together. It definitely worked. That's why I'm so excited to share this information. And of course, I would love it if you can dig into some of the specifics at the event, the 22 videos that we did, and the some of the questions you might ask in advanced interview technique. Ryan Spranger from dreamengine.com.au. Obviously, if you've got a video project that you feel is beyond doing it yourself, I highly recommend Ryan.
Thank you, James.
Take care.
Discover how to build your business
super fast.
Check out superfastbusiness.com.